You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. A new year and a fresh start for Michigan's legislature. The new session began at noon today. In the State House, there are 43 new members and a brand new speaker, DeWitt Republican Representative Tom Leonard, who is here with us now. Mr. Speaker, welcome to Stateside, and we want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Hey, good afternoon, and thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Before we get into what you feel are the big items on your agenda as House Speaker, I was hoping we could talk just a little about you for people who aren't from the DeWitt area, a chance to get to know you a little bit better. And I'm wondering, did you always harbor a desire to run for elected office?
No, I did not. In fact, so if you go back, I grew up in a small town called Montrose, just north of Flint, and I got the bug at a young age. I really wanted to go to law school, and once I went to undergrad at the University of Michigan, I have no idea why, but I really had a strong passion for sports and entertainment, and I really wanted to be the next Jerry Maguire. I was going to head out to law school, and I wanted to be a sports entertainment lawyer, and one thing led to another, and while I was at the University of Michigan, I started interning for a then up-and-coming young congressman by the name of Mike Rogers, and I interned for him for about 3 months and really got the political bug, and it was really during that internship that I gained a passion for politics, but I didn't know if I was going to run for office. And then a couple years later, went to law school at Michigan State, and during one of our moot court competitions, one of the teachers grabbed me, or the professors grabbed me and said, hey, I think you would do very well in the courtroom. Have you ever looked at interning for a prosecutor's office? And I said, no, I haven't. And I applied for a position or an internship in the Genesee County Prosecutor's Office, did that for a summer, absolutely loved it, wound up becoming a prosecutor. And I thought that's what I would do for the next 10, 15, 20 years. But life took a turn. The good Lord had different plans, and here I am.
Here you are. You are not the new Jerry Maguire. You are the new Speaker of Michigan's House. So what do you see as the most important role that you will play as Speaker?
Well, you know, one thing that I have really been talking about as the leader of this chamber, not just, you know, Speaker of the House is not just the leader of the group and majority, the Republicans, but also the Democrats. I've got to lead this chamber. And one of the things that I have really been harping or pushing is bringing more civility back to the political process. As you know, this was probably one of the most uncivil election cycles that we have had in our nation's history, all the way from the local to the national level, and it was on both sides. It wasn't just one side. I believe it was both sides. So one of the things that I've really been pushing is making certain that we bring civility to the process. I know that Republicans and Democrats are going to do our battles over the next 2 years. I think we all know that. We've got a very big election cycle coming up with everything open at the top of the ticket here in the state, as well as the House and the Senate. And we've got to make certain that when we are tackling those big issues, we conduct ourselves in a way with so much respect and so much dignity that when the sun comes up the following day, we can come together, come back to the table, and work on the next big issue together.
I want to talk about what you feel are your top priorities over the next 2 years, big on your agenda. You certainly have talked a lot about the need to change the teacher pension system and the municipal workers' post-retirement health care, and it didn't get done in lame duck. Why not?
Yeah, so let's talk about, you know, the teacher pension first. And you know, you've got two separate issues, and that is one of my top priorities. And the reason being is we've got a situation right now where our teacher pension system is costing our local school districts about 36% of the payroll. And that is something that is unacceptable, unsustainable. And, you know, if you had any other business or anybody in the private sector that had that type of number going out of their payroll, they wouldn't be in business very long. And we've got to make certain that we scale those costs back so that we can get more money into the classroom and hopefully get our new young teachers pay raises. Now, one fallacy I do want to set straight. I've had several teachers come to me because they read this in the news and they say, why are you trying to take away my pension, or why do you want to do this? That is false. Current teacher pensions are constitutionally protected. No pension would go away. What we are trying to do is stop the bleeding, get the system shut down for the new incoming teachers, get them into a 401k system so that we can get more money back into the classroom. Now, you would also asked about the OPEB liability situation for our local governments, and that is something we've got to take a strong look at. I believe overall statewide we've got about $12.1 billion in OPEB liabilities out there for our local units of government, and I will tell you, I think probably the reason that died in lame duck was the timing just wasn't right. It was too quickly. We had not brought the right people in to have the discussion. And to Speaker Cotter's credit, at least he got the conversation started. And I actually met with the police and fire associations during lame duck when I knew this was going to be a very big uphill climb. Myself and now Speaker Pro Tem Chatfield, who was working on that bill at the time, agreed to put the brakes on it, put the pause on it, and bring everybody to the table this winter or this spring. And I'm glad to say it wasn't too long after that that the governor actually stepped forward and said he wanted to put together a work group. So certainly this is something we've got to talk about. When we look at Lansing, and that's the example that I use, I think the last numbers I saw, $451 million in OPEB liabilities and only 14% funded. That's something we've got to address, and if we don't, cities like that will go bankrupt, and all of our retirees will lose the health care that they worked for, and we cannot let that happen.
I think a lot of people did feel that changing the rules on retired police and fire and other municipal workers was cruel.
Well, it's something, again, we have got to address this. We've got to make certain that these cities don't go bankrupt, because at the end of the day, if they do, our hardworking retirees are going to lose everything that they have. And there's certainly a lot of good arguments to bring to the table. I mean, for instance, I had one of the association members call me because one of the things that they were talking about was having retirees pay 20% of their health care. And they said, well, have you considered this? There are some retirees out there that have six-figure pensions. Not many, but there are a few. And there's also few that have pensions that are under $12,000. So when you look at somebody paying $4,000 for a $20,000 health care plan, somebody that has a six-figure pension is going to be able to pay that much easier than somebody with a $12,000 or $14,000 pension. So this is the discussion we have to have. Again, we've got to solve this problem. We've got to bring people to the table. And I'm committed to doing that to ensure that we keep our local government solvent, but also make certain that those retirees that work so hard for that health care make certain that they don't lose it all in a bankruptcy.
Speaker, you've been vocal about the increasing number of mentally ill inmates in Michigan prisons, and we've got numbers from the Corrections Department that they're saying between 2012 and 2016, we got a 14% increase in the numbers of prisoners who've been diagnosed with mental illness. What are your thoughts? Where would you like to see us go from here?
Well, certainly, and this has become a big issue for me, and I am so proud. I was able to work for Jenny Barkey, who is the probate judge in Genesee County. That was the first job I received out of law school, even before I became a prosecutor. And she started the pilot program for the mental health courts here in Michigan. And I will be the first to say, one thing you will learn about me is I will tell you if I'm wrong. And I remember when she started that mental health court, and we went to the first day of session, and I went back to her chambers afterwards. I said, Judge, this is never going to work. And I'm proud to say I talked to her a few months ago, and she now has an 80 to 90% success rate, dozens of individuals getting the help they need, getting back on their medication, looking for jobs, finishing their GEDs, finishing their diplomas. So one thing we need to look at, and I don't claim to have all the answers to this problem, but we've got to look at earlier intervention. You know, we can look at addressing the prison population, but the bottom line is this. Once somebody has committed a heinous crime, once they've killed somebody, once they've harmed a family, at that point, it's too late. We've got to get folks the help they need before they commit that crime and cost us nearly three times what the average inmate is. It's not only the right thing to do, but it's a huge cost savings as we go forward for our prison system.
So you're really talking about an overarching theme about delivering better mental health care in Michigan.
Absolutely. And what I have found and what I learned through that mental health court, and again, I'm no expert on this, I'm no psychiatrist, I'm no psychologist, but what I have found is many of these individuals, they are much different people when you get them on their medication. And I am a firm believer that many of those that are currently in our prison system that are going to be locked up for decades, had they just been on their medication, they probably never would have committed that crime because they are much different people when they're on their meds. And we've got to realize that this is a problem. Again, I don't have all the answers, but I'm committed to at least getting the conversation started and doing everything I can over the next 2 years to help us move the ball forward to help those that are mentally ill.
I'm talking with the new Speaker of Michigan's House, Speaker Tom Leonard. And one thing that did not get done last session was expanding Michigan's Freedom of Information Act to include the governor and the governor's executive staff, and also setting up a new legislative Open Records Act for lawmakers in the legislature. What do you want to do, if anything, on transparency and opening up FOIA laws?
Certainly, I supported that package of FOIA bills, and I will continue to support them. Right now, our caucus is currently in the process of putting together our action plan, they know where I'm at on the issue, and I think this is going to have to be a broader caucus discussion. Certainly, if the caucus wants to go that route, then I will support it 100%. I have intentionally left my top three priorities to three particular issues, and I've done that intentionally because I know that this is going to be a team effort. We've got to come together. We've got to set our agenda. And hopefully that is something that our caucus will want to take up. I support it, but we'll see where the caucus wants to go.
I want to pivot over to the Flint water crisis, which certainly is by no means over. I'm wondering, as you've seen this unfold, Mr. Speaker, how would you characterize the state's response and the legislature's response in general to Flint?
Well, I believe the legislature has done everything that we can and what's been asked of us at this point. I mean, as soon as we learned last term that this crisis was brewing and it became apparent to us as a legislature, we immediately appropriated, I believe it was $10.5 million to make certain that Flint was switched over to a different water source. And I've had very good conversations with Senator Ananick about this, who I know represents that district. I believe he knows, and I've been very, again, upfront that because I'm from that area, because I prosecuted in that area, Michigan has a speaker that has a very big spot in my heart for the city of Flint. There are a lot of great people there, and the legislature has responded. I believe we've appropriated at this point nearly $250 million, and we are going to continue to do everything we can to solve this problem and make it right, but we've got to make certain that we're doing so in a way that's going to protect our taxpayers. We can't just throw money at the problem for the sake of throwing money at it. We've got to do so the right way, but again, the Speaker of this House is committed to making certain that we make this situation right.
What more do you see from where you sit? What more do you think needs to be done for Flint and in response to this water crisis?
We've got to continue to do the proper testing to ensure that clean water is going into every house. We've got to continue to make certain that we're delivering water to the residents of that city. But most importantly, we've got to make certain that that city gets back on the right track and they are doing the right things in terms of investing in their infrastructure. I mean, one of the things that I have said is that this was a colossal disaster all the way from the local to the federal level and everything in between. This was a total government failure. And, you know, to Governor Rick Snyder's credit, he is the one person that I have seen that stood up, raised his hand, apologized, took responsibility, and said, let's get this right. So certainly we've got to make certain that the testing is happening and that we're getting clean water to the citizens of Flint. Again, I'm willing to do anything I can to help make this situation right.
To your point, I want to take you a little further into that. You mentioned a desire to see more civility in dealings, in political dealings in Michigan. Certainly a lot has been made about what many people see as a widening rift between Republicans and Democrats. How do you expect the relationship to play out between you and Sam Singh, the House Democratic leader?
I believe it will go very well. It has gone well so far. One of the big things that I think we can all do to bring civility, not just in the political process, but as you know, it always brings peace even at home, is to make certain that we are communicating. And Representative Singh and I have done a great job communicating. We've already had several meetings together. They've gone very well. You know, I believe he's got the best of intentions in his heart. I believe we both do. Sometimes we just have different ways of wanting to get there. But I believe I've got a good and honest partner in the House over on the other side of the aisle. He and I have worked closely together in the Capitol Caucus here in Lansing. So I would expect that the relationship is going to be great going forward. Again, and I'll be upfront about this, and Sam and I have admitted this. We know that we're going to have our battles. And But when we do, we've got to make certain that we are doing so in a respectful and dignified way so that the following day, once that battle's over, we can come to the table and we can start tackling another big issue together.
And knowing that the Republicans have held the majorities in both houses, they're still recognizing there are people throughout Michigan who strongly feel that Democratic lawmakers speak to their concerns, people who support Democratic initiatives, which haven't tended to get very far in a GOP-controlled legislature. Is there a space for that give and take, that compromise that used to be the way things got done in Lansing?
Well, I'm willing to work with anybody from any district and from any party to solve Michigan's most pressing problems. And, you know, one thing I can say in terms of the bipartisanship, and I'd have to look at the numbers, but I believe when you look at what we solved and accomplished last term, yes, there were a few issues that were strictly partisan, if you will. But the vast majority of issues that we tackled over the last couple of years, I believe it was over 85 or 90%, were bipartisan. I mean, I look back to two terms ago when I took the reins and started working on the preliminary examination system here in Michigan. Now, that was a situation where folks said, Tom, you can never get it done. We've tried for decades, and it's simply never going to happen. And that's basically the starting point in the criminal justice process. And I'm proud to say that when I worked on that particular issue, we found out the reason that it was so contentious is because nobody had ever gotten the prosecuting attorneys and the District Judges Association in the same room to talk about the issue. Once they did, they emerged with a wonderful compromise. At that point, I approached the ACLU and the defense bar. They thought it was a great compromise, and I believe that legislation passed unanimously in the House, and there was only one no vote in the Senate. So again, this is about bringing people to the table. It's about open communication, and I believe when you have those open lines of communication, that's how you're going to get the best bipartisan policy.
What did you learn from your predecessor, Kevin Cotter, about what to do and what not to do as Speaker of the State House?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, it's so hard to look back. And, you know, and I don't want to compare myself to any prior leader, whether it be Kevin Cotter, whether it be Jace Bolger. What I would say is I can only speak on behalf of myself. You know, I know Speaker Cotter had just a very, very tough 2 years. When you look at the two members that we had to expel, when you look at the Detroit, not just the water situation, but the Detroit public school situation, he had a lot on his plate. So I'm looking at going forward. That's where I'm at with this.
As you enter your final term, I'd love to get your thoughts on term limits. Are they a good thing, or do we all lose out because just about the time that a lawmaker has gotten enough experience to be seasoned, it's time to go?
So what I would say, and hear me out on this, I am actually a firm believer, and I actually advocate, and I am for term limits. What I would say is this. I believe any good thing can be critiqued and be made better. One of the proposals that I liked a few years ago was when then-Representative Bill Rogers proposed a resolution, but to basically say, we're not going to expand the number of years a legislator can actually serve, and that being 8 in the Senate and 6 in the House, that being 14. But what we would do is, under this proposal, is allow you to serve 14 any way that you want. So you could serve 14 in the House, 14 in the Senate, but after 14, you're out of here. And I think that would be a good compromise, because what I've seen is, in the House, you've got a lot of members that would like to stay here, really work hard, but that Senate seat opens, and as soon as it does, they know that they've got to jump, because that's the one opportunity that you have. I think if we could look at a proposal like that, that would just keep us at 14 years, but allow us to serve the way that, serve in either chamber, I think what you do is you'd stop a lot of this turnover, and you'd get a lot better work product.
Michigan's new Speaker of the House, Tom Leonard, we want to thank you for spending time with us today on Stateside, and I certainly look forward to us being able to talk again.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day and any time, okay?